Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Hi, folks. I am here, lucky enough to be here with Dori Clark, who's a marketing and strategy consultant, and she's a colleague of mine at the Harvard Business Review. She also writes for Entrepreneur and Forbes. She consults and speaks to a bunch of different clients, Google, the World Bank, Microsoft, Morgan Stanley. In other words, we're really lucky to have her here with us for a few moments. She wrote the standout book, Standout, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. It's a smart book. It's filled with really great and interesting anecdotes. It's also a book that's so practically written. It's interesting and it's practical, which is sort of the gold star for any good book that you want to actually use. So, Dori, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Peter, thank you. It's always a pleasure to get to talk with you.
I should also say Dori is a friend of mine, and that makes this all the more fun. Dori, what's the big idea of Standout? Why did you write the book?
So I wrote the book because we live in an increasingly noisy, busy, frenetic world. And as I think many professionals have seen in their own lives, it's getting harder to stand out. It seems like there's a lot of competition. Everybody's screaming at the top of their lungs. And I wanted to create a book that enabled smart, talented professionals, people who have good ideas, to actually get those ideas heard. I don't want the loudest voice to always win. I want the best ideas to win. And so I interviewed about 50 top thought leaders in a variety of different fields and essentially tried to reverse engineer the process by which they developed their ideas and came to prominence for them so that we could provide a bit of a roadmap and help people with good ideas get them heard.
Great. So why don't you give us just a very quick synopsis of the three parts of the book, which I think are really useful.
So the book, basically, it's broken into three sections. The first one is about how do you develop your breakthrough idea? What does that process even look like? So I laid out some strategies that people can use to spark their own thinking and their own creativity. The second section is about building a following around your ideas. How do you go through that process of getting known and building a community so that other people are actually talking about what you do? And then finally, I speak a bit about how do you make it sustainable? How do you start monetizing the ideas? How do you keep it going? That last section actually is going to be the focus of my next book, which I actually just signed a contract with HBR Press to write. So I'm pretty excited about expanding that out.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So I'm very interested in these first two parts because they play off of each other in an interesting way, and I have a bunch of questions around it. First, I want to play with something I read early on in the book, which is that you talk about a man who became an international thought leader when he was laid off. He had a tremendous number of options because he was so well-respected, because he went out and he did what he needed to do in order to make his name a brand. And so when he was in a situation which he needed it, he had all of the support he needed. You also talk about a woman, I think Diane Mulcahy, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but she ran investments for the Kauffman Foundation, and she exposed the venture capital world for the sort of high risk and poor returns, and she ended up being shunned by many. And I thought it was two interesting examples, because one is an example where your breakthrough idea becomes really big, and you become really big as a result. The other one is an example of someone who became really big, who had a huge impact, but in some ways was hurt by like the spread of her idea. And I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful that you highlighted that piece, because one of the themes that I wanted to drive is that sometimes when you are a thought leader, that means if you're doing it right, that you are a truth teller. And it's not always popular, honestly. But if you really want to make an impact professionally, if you really want to be able to make a difference, you need to be able to speak truth to power. And in the case of Diane, everybody else was kind of going along to get along. And she was one of the first people to actually speak out, backed by data, backed by evidence, to say, hey, wait a minute, there's a reason that the returns are not as good as everybody predicted they would be. I think there are compensatory benefits. You know, she did make some enemies from revealing this research, but she actually was able to really begin in some subtle but noticeable ways to change the way that things were reported and that the industry was doing business. So she was making changes that were lasting, and the coverage actually was pretty substantial. So if you are willing to speak the truth about powerful things, you're not only going to get flack, you will get flack, but you also will get noticed. You also can make a difference. So
look, we're talking about her, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about her. So
that's right.
That's something, right? And it also, I love this message that you're sharing, that a commitment to your big idea should be bigger than your commitment to yourself in some ways, and that the big idea will carry you along with it. But from a sustainability perspective, if you care so much about your big idea, that's going to be sustainable because you're going to want so badly to get it out there and you're willing to speak truth about it. Whereas if it's only about you, you're going to flitter from one thing to the next, you know, hoping to hit something and probably never get anywhere.
Yeah, that's really important, because I think a lot of times people shy away from putting themselves in the spotlight, or even being perceived to put themselves in the spotlight, because they have a script running in their head that says, oh, it's too self-aggrandizing, it's too narcissistic, we shouldn't be sticking our head out and talking about things. But the truth is, if it's about the idea, it's almost a duty you have to the idea. If you are an entrepreneur running a business and you want it to get known, if you are a social change agent and you want to promote a different way of looking at social policy around homelessness, if you are a professor doing research, if you are an author who's written a book, you know, any of these things, if you are an employee that really wants to make a change in organizational policies, you need to be willing to take a risk so that your idea has a chance to be heard.
And I think people respect that also. If people begin to smell that you're just out there for self-promotion, they are going to turn away. But if they feel like there's something bigger than you that you're advocating for, I think that's very respectable and it's very attractive to a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
So you have great ideas for coming up with great ideas. One thing I was sort of writing about as I was reading your book is, you know, in some ways, the big idea of this book is the big idea, right? Is coming up with big ideas. And I'm wondering what you found in terms of the role of personality in creating that big idea. That, you know, I think some people think about the world around them with curiosity and they're commitment and engagement. They're engaged deeply with ideas. They love ideas. I think you love ideas. I love ideas. I mean, I just love ideas, right? I love thinking about ideas. I love hearing new ideas. I love reading about them. And other people, you know, are sort of more satisfied to go through their days or they're fascinated with other things, but not necessarily the world of ideas. And I'm wondering, you know, is there an archetype? Is there a kind of personality type that is well suited to creating standout ideas, and others where they might work really hard at it but may not ever reach that standout idea?
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, the first gate that people have to pass through is just sheer interest in developing ideas. Is it something that is exciting to you? Is it appealing to make a bigger contribution, to get known for your ideas? For some people, it just doesn't appeal. And if it doesn't, that's fine. But especially the people that I wanted to reach with this book are people who would like to make a difference, would like to share their ideas, but they are either worried that their idea isn't good enough, or, you know, oh, you know, I have an idea, but everybody else has the same idea, or, you know, gosh, why would anyone listen to me? If you're that kind of person and you are dealing with those voices, I wanted to try to create a guide so that you listen and realize, because I heard this again and again in talking to these people who are now regarded as top experts, it is not that there is a lightning bolt and this magic idea happens. It is that over time, through diving in, through doing the work, through kind of muddling through iterations, their ideas come to them. They didn't start out as geniuses. They started out as regular, confused people with questions like you and me. And it was by engaging over time that they came to the ideas. And so for anyone who wants to make a contribution but just isn't sure how, or they're not sure if they can, the answer is yes, you can. And that's who I wrote Standout for.
And if you have the interest, then that's something that you'll end up pursuing and being able to do.
Absolutely.
So the two sides of this book, part one and part two, were interesting to me because the part one is about developing your standout idea. And a lot of the examples of people who were in there, I knew their names. And part two was about kind of what you can do to develop a following. And a lot of those people, I didn't really know their names as much, but they've developed big followings. And what I'm wondering about is if you've got a big idea, like you look at a Gladwell, And you go, I don't know, does he need to develop a following, or is the sheer brilliance of his writing enough to develop a following? Meaning, are the people who have to work hard to develop this following? And I would put myself in this category, I have to be sort of aware of that because I'm not Gladwell. Do we have to do stuff? And is there a formula for the people who, write a breakout book or a breakout idea, and they haven't done all of this work to develop kind of a community and a following and a network and all of that?
So, with Malcolm Gladwell, he's an interesting example because we'll ask what permitted him to be able to write The Tipping Point to begin with? And the answer is that he wrote an article for The New Yorker. It became really popular, and he was able to adapt it and turn it into this full-length book, The Tipping Point, which just went insane. So it's absolutely true. He did not cultivate, social media following. Social media didn't exist in 2000. He was not necessarily a household name at the time, but he had social proof and institutional affiliations in spades. And so that's still something that's valuable. And if you have that, if you can work it, by all means, I blog for the Harvard Business Review, you blog for the Harvard Business Review. Great. Let's do it. Let's use that. But I think it's especially salient for people out there who are still developing or they don't necessarily have an institutional affiliation. In the past, the gates would have just been closed to them. You don't write for HBR or The New Yorker. Well, sorry, you can't get a book deal. But these days, there is a lot more egalitarian opportunity because you don't have to have that affiliation. If you, on your own, have been able to build a large social media following or a following for your podcast or your blog or whatever, you can create an alternative route by which you can access that platform and convince a publisher to take a chance on you or to convince a TV producer to make a TV show about you. So I think it's kind of a broadening of opportunities.
That makes a lot of sense. So I was talking with a client of ours who's the head of the CEO of a licensing company. So it's their job to find licenses that are going to hit big, cartoons or something that's going to like really hit big. They want to find the next Dilbert. They want to find, the next Snoopy. And I asked him, like, what are the criteria? What does he look for? And how does he know a hit when he sees it? How does he know something that's going to be viral? And it's his job to do this. And his answer was, it's like throwing spaghetti on a wall and hoping something sticks. Like, it's unpredictable. Like, you don't know what's going to be. And I'm wondering, that was his view. I'm wondering your view. When you look at all these standout ideas, like, can you manufacture a viral hit? Do you know what to do, or do you have a sense? I mean, if we follow the rules in standout, will that bring us to a viral hit? What's going on with something that takes off?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, in The New Yorker, I'm not sure if it's by Malcolm Gladwell, but one of his colleagues at The New Yorker actually wrote a really interesting piece within the last year or so about a company that actually specializes in at least attempting to predict, based on algorithms, which pop songs are going to go viral, based on all of the different traits, the sort of big data crunching of what makes a monster hit. So to a certain extent, at least when it comes to pop music, they have been able to begin to develop patterns for that. But when it comes to videos or things like that, I mean, it is, at least at this point, fairly impossible to determine. I mean, you can say, well, you know, they all have these characteristics, but you know, they arouse strong emotions, or they have kittens, or whatever. Right. But yeah, it is a real challenge. And so ultimately, what I suggest is that if you are, for instance, somebody who is a bit of a Renaissance person, and you're interested in a lot of different things, and you're not sure, you know, which one you want to pursue, I think one of the best things that you can do is essentially place a lot of small bets to try to see what resonates, and go with the momentum of the crowd. I mean, if you'd be happy doing, you know, 10 different things, well, don't just guess randomly. Place a bet, check it out, and see what people are responding to. And so my version of this, in fact, which kind of kicked off my professional career, is that I you know, started blogging in 2010 for HBR. And one of my first posts that I wrote, you know, among many that I've now done, was called How to Reinvent Your Personal Brand. And that became a popular post. And in fact, it was popular enough that they asked me to turn it into a magazine piece for HBR. And when the magazine piece came out, I had multiple literary agents come to me and say, oh, this is interesting. You know, have you thought about turning it into a book? And I was able to, I picked one of the agents, I wrote a proposal, and was able to sell that to HBR. And it became my first book, Reinventing You. That was something that literally was sort of incubated from 700 word blog post to 2,500 word magazine article to, you know, 50, 60,000 word book. And it was, you know, writing that 700 words was not a huge investment. I write many 700 word blog posts, but that was the one that the wind was at its back.
You know, and 18 minutes was the same thing. When I put 18 minutes out, it started out as a blog post. It was a really successful blog post. It's actually, it brings me to something that, it reminds me of something that I've written about and spoken about, which is this idea that the world rewards productivity, not perfection. And like what you're saying seems to reinforce that, which is put a lot of stuff out there. Keep putting stuff out there. Put stuff out there and put it and put it and put it. And notice what sticks in some ways. Like, notice what people congregate around. And that becomes, in effect, you know, market research. If we try too much for perfection, we'll put one thing out a year, and the chance of that one hitting is much less than if we put, you know, 200 things out a year and one of them strikes a chord.
I think it's really true. I mean, I think sometimes people draw this sharp distinction. You know, oh, are you saying, you know, create a lot of stuff? Does that mean you don't care about quality? And, you know, of course not. It needs to be good enough. But there's a very wide difference between good enough and perfect. And I think that a lot of people get hung up on it.
Right. Dory Clark, thank you so much for joining us. Will you just tell people how to get in touch with you if they want to get in touch with you?
Thank you, Peter. Absolutely. If folks are interested in learning more, and also if they would like to download my free 42-page Standout workbook, which is adapted from Standout and walks you step-by-step through developing your own breakthrough idea and building a following around it, you can do that on my website, which is doryclark.com. It's DoryClark.com.
Thank you so much, Dory Clark, a friend of mine who wrote Standout, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. Dory, you have helped me connect with people, and you've helped me kind of understand the importance of connecting people. So I'm really appreciative of that. You teach me. I'm so happy that you were here to be able to teach listeners and to be in this conversation with me. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.